Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Masonic Central. This is a podcast for Freemasons by Freemasons. This is Greg Stewart coming to you from Los Angeles and my co-host, Dean Kennedy. How you doing, Dean? Great, thanks. Excellent, excellent. We're new on Blog Talk Radio, so this is our first show on here. Welcome to all those that are listening from the past and all those that are listening now from this point forward. We're glad to have you here. This is our first show for April, today being April 5th, and we have an exciting guest today who is the editor of the Hibiscus Masonic Review Journal. We'll get to him in just a couple minutes. Dean, I think we have something new this week, don't we?
We sure do, Tim, Greg. Well, first of all, we're on a new platform, if no one's noticed. If anyone's noticed, they've obviously connected through a different fashion than previous. That's brand new. As well, we have a new news segment that's going to be coming out for the first part of our show that I'm rather excited about. Greg, did you want to talk a little bit about the platform before I bring out Tim Bryce's news segment?
Absolutely. Well, for all those who may remember, we were operating on a platform that was called TalkShoe, and it was a very good platform. We were there for about 10 months. It did everything that we needed it and wanted it to do and more. But we started pushing the boundaries of it and realized that we needed to try to get a little bit more out of this and wanted to experiment with Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio actually is something that Dean and I came across many months ago, back October of last year, I think, wasn't it, Dean?
You got us.
It was close to that. Right. So we were looking at it at that point, and we're looking to try to move over, and through a little bit of a discussion and finagling, we were finally able to move the program over. It offers the same features that we had before. We have a live interactive chat. If you're listening to us live tonight from the player, from the show webpage, you can actually find a link to go into chat. It'll say chat now right above the profile of the show. And you can join us in there where we have several folks in right now. I think we have about 9 users actually in the chat room tonight. So that we can all talk. And so it's similar to the platform that we had previously and allows us to talk. And one of the cool things that it allows us to do is actually we can now play some pre-recorded audio, which is part of what we're going to bring to you now. What we have going on now is a little bit of news. Dean, have you got that tape ready to roll?
Well, I do, Greg, and I'd just like to introduce you to Tim Bryce, who's going to introduce us to the news tonight. Go ahead, Tim. Go ahead, Tim, I said.
Oh, no.
Welcome to Masonic Central, the podcast for Freemasons by Freemasons.
You do.
Here.
Well, that's our intro. Let's share our news.
Well, this is a good start, Greg.
lots of bugs.
What did you do to my Tim Bryce? My Tim Bryce soundbite, man.
For as professional as Dean and I may seem on TV, we're still working the bugs out on this. The technology is surprisingly new to us, given our previous experience with it. We do have an audio file in there somewhere, I think, don't we, Dean?
Hold on one second, Greg. I'm going to try this one more time. Tim, take it away. No, I can't get it to work.
Well, that's all right. You know, we'll work on that. We'll see what's going on for it. The technology is brand new, so we're just starting to play and upload MP3 files. I had a surprising discovery that how hard it was to actually convert an MP4 file into an MP3. I ended up having to download shareware software and actually try to cut files on the fly. So obviously this technology is a little new to us. Maybe we'll employ our tech guy to help us out in the future and see if we can get everything put together. But we have a gallery of folks that are listening. We have 12. Do you have something, Dean?
Yeah, I was going to do the mini piece that Tim had talked about anyway because I remembered a few of the pieces that he talked about. And I do want to bring them up because he did a lot of work on that piece. And because I can't play it, shouldn't mean that I should let his work go unheard. Tim did in his news piece, which was about 6 minutes long, of a packed full of news. He did bring up a little bit about, for one, the affair in West Virginia. He had read out the full resolution now, and what had gone on in Minnesota. However, since that, I know that there's been other news, whereas that motion has been rescinded. So I did want to bring up that particular piece of Masonic news that that Tim had worked hard on. As well, we wanted to bring up, him and I had talked about a few April Fool's pranks that were played in the Masonic world over the last week. One being the formation of the South New England Grand Lodge of Southern New England, which you can go to the Tao of Masonry web blog, and you can actually go and visit the Grand Lodge website of Southern New England if you wish, which was on April 1st. It was mandated to be the amalgamation of Rhode Island and Connecticut Grand Lodges. However, on April 2nd, there was some stalls in the merger activity. So you can go and check those out. Those are two recent activities in Masonic news that were amongst a few others that Tim had worked on, and next week we will have his full piece ready for air. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm gonna try this one more time. Let me just see if we can get this file to play.
Thanks, Greg and Dean. This is Tim Bryce with the Masonic News for April 2nd, 2009. In the news, the Herkimer Evening Telegram of New York reported, the Masonic Lodge in Newport is celebrating its 150th year of existence in 2009. Back in 1858, the order granted them a warrant to operate as an interim lodge, gaining their permanent charter in 1859. According to the celebratory feeling of achieving a century and a half of existence is the fact that the temple where the group meets has been named to the New York State Historical Registry. It was the only historical site in the Herkimer, Oneida County area to achieve such status this year. According to Lodge member Stuart Card, who has spearheaded the drive to be named to the state's historical register, the lodge was one of only about a half a dozen sites across the state to be selected. Card said, "The idea of seeking registry germinated from our discussions about the 150-year celebration, and it just went on from there." The Sakin Gazette Enterprise of Texas reported, members of the Guadalupe County Masonic Lodge No. 109 gave special recognition to Geronimo resident Wilfred Bartoszkiewicz on Thursday night. Lodge member Ed Goddard said the Community Builder Award is the highest award the Masonic Grand Lodge gives to a member of the community who is not a Mason. According to Goddard, Wilford understands the importance of community involvement. He has served on numerous committees and boards for such organizations as the Luling Foundation, Navarro Independent School District, Capital Farm Credit, Guadalupe County Youth Show, Guadalupe County Appraisal District, Farm Service Agency, the Farm Bureau, First National Bank, Farm Home Administration, and the Eden Home. He also supported the Guadalupe County 4-H and Navarro FFA with scholarships. Upon receiving this honor, Bartoszkiewicz was at a loss for words, but still managed to find the right ones to say. "It has been an honor to receive this award," he said. "It is very satisfying, and it brings me new challenges at this stage in life." San Francisco Chronicle of California reports, the Grand Master of the Masons of California and the leaders of the local Masonic lodges were on hand at Visitation Valley Middle School Thursday to announce a new partnership with San Francisco Public Schools. The State Masonic Foundation handed over a $30,000 check to School Superintendent Carlos Garcia during the morning event. District officials said the money will help create an informational campaign aimed at increasing participation in public schools, including how to volunteer or donate funds to public schools. Word has been received that on March 28th, the Grand Lodge of Minnesota overwhelmingly passed a resolution at their Grand Communications regarding recognition of the Grand Lodge of West Virginia. The motion reads, quote, "Whereas the Grand Lodge of West Virginia has arbitrarily and recklessly ignored the will of their brethren, expelling a past Grand Master without trial or redress, violating the ancient and accepted customs and tenets of our fraternity, and bring shame and disrepute on all Masons and Freemasonry, and whereas they have been named in a civil suit, further bringing the craft into public disrepute and score. Therefore, be it resolved that the Grand Lodge of Minnesota expresses its concern over these actions and will consider suspending recognition of the Grand Lodge of West Virginia upon the recommendation of our External Relations Committee at our next annual communications in 2010. If there is not correction of these actions and a renewed willingness by the Grand Lodge of West Virginia to enter into the modern fraternity of Freemasonry, end quote. Although they have taken no Masonic action, in August 2008, the Grand Master of the Most Worshipful Prince Hall Grand Lodge of West Virginia, Worshipful Brother Robin Griffith, filed an amicus brief with the court in support of Haas's civil case against the Grand Lodge of West Virginia. Griffith's brief points out that West Virginia is one of only 10 states where the Grand Lodge does not recognize their Prince Hall counterparts, which were established because black Masons are traditionally not welcome in mainstream lodges. It reads in part, quote, "The plaintiff, former Grand Master Haas, in 2006 instituted reforms in the West Virginia Grand Lodge designated to initiate the process of recognition of the Prince Hall lodges. Such reforms were revoked by the edict of the Grand Master who succeeded former Grand Master Haas in October of 2006. The Prince Hall Grand Lodge of West Virginia stands for the proposition that all Masons subject to the authority of regular Grand Lodges, mainstream or otherwise, are entitled to notice of charges and an opportunity to be heard prior to expulsion," end quote. Brothers, I'm sorry to report the passing of Brother Walter Pollock of Tarpon Lodge number 112 in Florida at the age of 101. Brother Walter served the fraternity for over 75 years, making him the oldest Mason in Florida. In addition to his craft lodge, where he served for many years as chaplain, he was also very active in Egypt Shrine in Tampa. Alas, my brother, we all mourn his passing. And finally, no brothers, there is no Grand Lodge of Southern New England, AFNAM. The contrived Grand Lodge, which represented the merger of Connecticut and Rhode Island, was nothing more than a well-engineered April 1st prank by Worshipful Brother Tom Acosti of Connecticut, complete with a very effective webpage, which I suggest you check out through Brother Tom's website at the Tao of Masonry. The address for that is Masonic Tao, that's T-A-O, masonictao.blogspot.com. And now back to Greg and Dean.
Thanks for that, Tim. Hey, it looks like we got it to work. Dean, what do you think?
I don't know what you did, but...
I'm not going to complain. It worked just fine. Thanks for that, Tim. I, you know, the one thing that was actually in the newscast, I think that just warrants an update is just what took place with the recognition issue. Right? All those that are in the blogosphere may be following along, and I read it just a day or so ago. I think that Chris Hodapp just posted up that is it Minnesota? Dean, do you remember?
Yes, it's Minnesota.
Minnesota that they rescinded the investigation, if I'm not mistaken. I'm sure we'll talk
yes.
about it more as things go along. So a little bit of new news that's already been backed up and put back into old news. So we'll definitely be hearing more from that in the future, or perhaps not. Maybe there is no more story in that story. I don't want to go too much further along because, again, with this new platform, we start promptly at 6 and we're going to end promptly at 7 in Pacific time. So we have to get to our guests. I want to say a quick hello to the editor of the Hibiscus Masonic Review Journal from Hibiscus Lodge number 275 in Coral Gables, Florida, Peter J. Millheiser. Brother Peter, how are you doing?
Fine. How are you guys tonight?
We're great.
Right.
Besides being as giddy as two schoolgirls at this is a good evening. I'm glad you're our first guest on this new platform.
Well, delighted.
How do you like maiden voyages, Peter? And no, we're not the Titanic, I hope.
Well, I'm glad we have the technology down, Pat.
Well, we have the technology. We'll see about down, Pat. We got about 50 minutes to go. I'm kidding. I'm glad that you're here with us, and thanks for being on the show. Just to mention real quick what we're here to talk about and what's made this such an important thing to talk about is the Hibiscus Masonic Review, which is a fairly large published journal that comes out of your lodge.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about it. How did you come about to initially publish this journal?
Well, I've been reading AQC, which is Ars Quadra Coronatorum, which is the Journal of Quadra Coronati Lodge in England, for years. And it's a research lodge, and it's just an incredible journal. And I see Heridum that comes out in the United States from the Scottish Rite Research Society, which similarly is an absolutely terrific journal. And I thought, why can't a lodge put out a really first-rate historical journal? Not a journal about the biography of one of your past masters, but something that's really worthwhile. And I was master the second time around about 3 years ago, and I bounced it off some of the other past masters and said, how about putting out a journal? And the answer was, go do it. So figured, how are we going to do this? We could have done it through the lodge, but then we would be involved with Grand Lodge, and some of the brothers said, well, Grand Lodge really doesn't authorize us to put out Masonic journals. So I said, let's just make it a separate entity. So we did. The brothers contributed to it, and I set out to get contributors. Well, what do you do? How do you get people to contribute? You email people. I knew a couple. I knew Yasha Beresiner over in England, who's just a wonderful brother and a wonderful Mason. He's a member of Quadra Coronati. I wrote him an email, and he was delighted to give us an article. I was over in England, and I ran into Andrew Prescott in the Grand Lodge of England Library, and I talked to him very briefly, and he said, you're absolutely welcome to use one of my articles. Talked to Martin Sherry, who's a librarian at the United Grand Lodge of England Library, and he said, fine, we'll get you an article. I wrote a couple articles. I sent an email out to Margaret Jacob in California because I've read some of her books, which are just absolutely stupendous. She was delighted to send me an article. When I was in England, I spoke briefly with Brent Morris, who at that time was an officer in Quadra Coronati Lodge. This was right before he became master. And he said, sure, we'll get you an article. So that was it. Found out about self-publishing, went to iUniverse.com, got the prize from them, got the articles, people emailed them to me, put it together, collected some money from my brothers, and we put out a journal.
And that's one of the neatest things, I think, about it is the volume of it with the diversity. This is not a small feat. This is nearly 260 pages of actual text, of live text from these various authors and contributors, and all with a strong variance of degree of proximity to the fraternity, so academics and those internal to it.
Well, we did get a lot of academics. The one I just described was the first year journal, came out in 2007. Then this published, it took off so well, and we got really nice reviews. We were able to get more contributors for the for our second volume, which appeared in 2008. And we've got a whole bunch of people who've appeared. Bill Weisberger wrote a wonderful article. I'd read one of Bill Weisberger wrote this book, Freemasonry on Both Sides of the Atlantic. He was the editor of it, which is just an encyclopedia of Freemasonry, basically. Tremendous number of really good articles about American and European Freemasonry. And he sent us an article for the first volume and also one for the second one, too. Again, Margaret Jacob contributed something. Yasha Beresiner came through with another article. I contacted Aubrey Newman, who's a member of Quadra Coronati, and he sent us a great article on Masonic journals. I wrote to Wallace McLeod up in Canada, and he got us an article on the causes of ritual divergence, showing how Masonry spread from state to state, from different areas in the United Kingdom into the states, and how the rituals differed. I had met Reverend Neville Barker Cryer once years ago, and he autographed a book for me down at the offices of AQC. And he sent me just a delightful article on the precursors of Kestrian Lodge in England, which is just an incredible exploration into English history. I got some other names from Bill Weisberg gave me a couple of names. I got a hold of Ed Brett, who's a professor. He's at the University of Pittsburgh and Loyola and La Roche College in Pittsburgh. He got us an article on Padre Miguel Hidalgo, the Mexican revolutionary who's a Mason. James Smith Allen at Southern Illinois University, he's a professor there, got us an article about Freemason women in revolutionary and Napoleonic France. I wrote to Trevor Stewart, and as I would write to each of these people, I would send them a copy of our journal, and so they could see what we had done the first time around. And he sent us an article on William Hutchinson, who was an English Freemason and anti-slavery dramatist. Alison Royal, who's a collections officer in the Library of the Grand Lodge of England, got us an article on Thomas Harper. And I'm a member of Thomas Harper Lodge in England, by the way, who was a jeweler who created incredible Masonic medals. Martin Cherry got us another one on the Chevalier Dion, who was the cross-dressing swordsman of France, who was a Freemason, for whom there was major wages before his death, whether he was a male or a female, and I'm not going to give it away. You have to read the article. I wrote an article about the, yeah.
Well, no, not to interrupt you, one of the things I wanted to ask you in regards to pulling all this work together, you mentioned briefly that it was something that you found at the lodge that you couldn't do, that the Grand Lodge just in their rules had specified to not do it that way.
No, they didn't. But some of the brothers were concerned. They said, look, there's nothing in our charter that says we're allowed to go out and go into the Masonic publishing business. So for that reason, and also because we didn't know in the future what type of articles we might have. So obviously they'll all be on Masonic history. So we said, why don't we just keep this as a separate entity? That's the only reason. Grand Lodge never said anything to us.
It was just in what you found in doing the research to publish it?
Well, no, it was just ahead. Basically, when we decided to start, we just thought it would be easier just to do it independently, so we could really be free to publish our own views. Actually, they're not even our views. They're the views of our contributors.
The views of others, right. And now, how did this, when you wanted to turn the same idea back to the lodge and actually produce this as a piece of education, how did you find that it worked out that way, or what did you have to do in order to try to broaden the aspect of education at Hibiscus?
Well, what we do at Hibiscus, we happen to have a wonderful lodge. A lot of young people. First of all, we have a tremendous number of young brothers in there. We have our line is basically made up of people in their 20s and 30s. We have a gray beard who's probably about 50, and he sort of totters around compared to the young guys. I'm not even in their ballpark. And we've got all kinds of. We've got doctors in our lodge, engineers, architects, computer software people, businessmen, bankers. Financial people. So we've got a super lodge, and we have education every month. Every month there is a lecture of Masonic education in the lodge, which takes up a significant part of a meeting. Plus, again, when I was master, second thing I did was create something called the Hibiscus Fellowship Club. And that's an educational entity, too. What I did is I made up a ritual for it, and it's based a little bit, it's vaguely modeled after a table lodge, but it's not Masonic. And we ran this, again, outside the lodge because we would have a little opening ritual, dinner. After dinner, we would have toasts, again, somewhat modeled on the English after-dinner proceedings. And then we'd have a lecture, again, on Masonic education. And then we would close. So our brothers were really getting two sets of Masonic education each month, one a lecture in the lodge and two, a lecture at the Fellowship Club. Except the Fellowship Club was for fun. This was where we usually get about 15 to 25 people. We have dinner. We sit around a U-shaped We try and make it a U-shaped table. We hold it at the shrine, and I'll come to that in a minute. And there's a lot of give and take, and it's fun. When you're toasting, you're having wine, it's a wonderful atmosphere. Our meetings run from about 7 to 9:30. Last meeting, the brothers were there till 1 in the morning, just talking. I'm sure they sipped a little wine. I left a little before that. But just discussing masonry. These brothers want to learn about masonry. They're interested. They want a different type of job. I think it was Tim Bryce who said they don't want their father's lodge. They're looking for something different, and that's what we're trying to give them. It's education, make it meaningful, and brotherhood. So that's the whole gist of this. So this ties in with the Hibiscus Masonic Review. Incidentally, anyone's interested, you can see the Hibiscus Masonic Review on Amazon.com, or if you're in overseas, just go to your local Amazon. Amazon.co.uk carries it, or you can go to iUniverse.com, or you can contact me through Hibiscus Lodge. We have a website, and we can get you copies.
Absolutely, and I was actually going to mention that as we came to a close tonight, off the HibiscusLodge.com website, it's right there on the front page, and you could purchase it right through there, which takes
right.
you to a site that has it available. Something interesting, I remember in our earlier conversations in developing this, the way that this fellowship club had to come about in order to lighten it up, I guess is probably the best way to describe it, to enable it to make it more of an evening relaxing supper club, you had to be a little creative in its creation. It wasn't something that was done strictly through the lodge, that you had to go another route.
No, I took another route. In other words, I didn't want it to be Masonic. It's similar to Masonic. We have names of officers, and we pick them and say, okay, Bill, you'll be the chaplain tonight. Bob, you're going to be junior warden. Joe, you're senior warden. And what we did is Harry Carr wrote a wonderful book. It's out of print. I'm sure it's out of print. It's called The Freemason at Work. You can get it from Lewis Masonic Publishing, if they still have it in press, or you can probably find it on eBay. And they have the ritual for the English after-dinner proceedings. I've been to lots of English lodges, and I belong to one, so I'm familiar with them. So we changed it a little bit. They toast the queen and the craft. We toast the flag and the craft. But a lot of it's very similar. They have a very specific protocol for how people sit at the head table. We don't really have. So we're much more casual on that. but we make it fun. We charge the canon, and we have a lot of Masonic toasting. We do Masonic fire. You guys have done it on one of your earlier shows. It's a lot of fun, but we do. Hello?
Yep, still here.
Yeah, we're still here, yeah.
Peter, we're still here. Go ahead.
So we do it fast, and as the evening goes by, you do it faster and faster and faster. And guys really get good at it. First time around, each night, we just, again, review how it's done. And then you do Masonic fire. It's equivalent to the 21-gun salute. You know, you say, present arms, you grasp your glass, take aim, hold it out in front of you, make the toast of the flag and the craft, and you drink. And you say, good fire, brethren, take your timing from me, and you go through the ritual of Masonic fire. It's by tradition, it's only done in a tiled or closed meeting. Anyway, that is just tradition. It's not Masonic law. And it's a lot of fun. But, you know, we do tell guys one thing. Say, guys, remember, we all have to drive home tonight. We don't want anybody to get in any accidents. So
everybody's got to pace themselves accordingly.
So, you know, you put a sip of wine in the glass, or you can even put water in it or a little Coca-Cola or something. Because, again, most guys have to drive home after the meeting.
Yeah.
Now,
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say why we do it at the shrine. Because of the alcohol issue, in Grand Lodge of Florida does not allow alcohol in Masonic events. So we ran the fellowship club for a while, but according to Florida law, basically anything that a group of Masons does is a Masonic event. So, Greg, if you and I get together and go bowling, that's fine. We can do whatever we want. But if we have 10 other guys from the lodge come with us, then it becomes a Masonic event, and it comes under the aegis of the Grand Lodge of Florida. So to get around this, we became a shrine unit. So it became the Hibiscus Fellowship Shrine Unit. Nothing changed. The shrine, and in fact, the shrine helped us out because they have a club called the Oasis Room, which is literally right across from the shrine building. And basically it's a bar restaurant. And we have it for the evening. There's no one else there. And it's just a wonderful venue to have a meeting. And we have a lot of fun. We really do. And we have great, all kinds of great talks. We just had a talk by the our sitting master on tarot cards and their Masonic implications. So this is kind of lighter things. I gave a talk on the spiritual meaning of Masonic etiquette. I gave a talk once on Masonic fire. We go through all types of talks. One of the brothers went through all ancient temples of the Middle East in relation to Solomon's Temple. So they're kind of a little bit lighter than what you find in Lodge.
And again, but all definitely worthy of talking about. These are the sort of things I think many people are craving to talk about.
Well, people have forgotten one thing in Masonry, and this is a criticism that I have of Masonry. And the Scottish Rite was guilty back in the 19th century, where they decided to make it, instead of being something participatory, where you, like you raised, it happens to you individually, you go through the ritual, instead you sat as an audience and watched a play. And so what happens in Lodge today, people just sit there. The master speaks, and if you want to say something, you have to be recognized and get up and stand up and talk. It's okay. I mean, I love going to Lodge, but the Fellowship Club is something different. You can say what you want. You can participate in it, which is the way old-time ancient masonry was. Not the ancients versus the moderns. I'm not talking about that. But back in the old days when people would meet in taverns, they'd sit around a table, they'd light their pipes, they'd have their wine or mead or beer or whatever they had, and they'd talk. And they had fun. They would enjoy it. Masonry should be two things. A, it should be something very spiritual, and this is what you do in Lodge. It's a very spiritual moment. That goes without saying. But then it's a part of it that should be fun. You should enjoy being with your brothers going to Lodge. That's what brings brothers back.
It's definitely the expression of that sort of agape fraternity of breaking bread and having the ability to sit and talk about it and not necessarily being ritual driven, I suppose.
Right.
So, Greg, I don't mean to interrupt, but it just occurs to me that a few questions that I wanted to pipe in and get them out. Peter, why are some Grand Lodges against the use of alcohol? In accordance with, I mean, Masonry was formed in taverns. Like, how do we get to that point? And do you think that the fact that you have to form a Scottish, I'm part of the Scottish unit. Sorry, a Shriners unit to get around bylaws set in Grand Lodge or constitutional issues set in Grand Lodge. I find there's something going on there. Do you ever get into those conversations?
A lot. I think it probably goes back to the Morgan Affair, where back in the 1820s, in 1826, where all of a sudden Masons had to prove that they were purer than pure. And one of the things probably grew out of that was the avoidance of alcohol, that and prohibition. So this is something that's just stayed. They didn't and now they just don't want to have the appearance of a drinking organization. But it's carried to extremes. We had a lodge, I was at Grand Lodge a few years back, It was a lodge in Broward County, the next county up, having major financial problems. And they had a lovely building which would be perfect for weddings. And people wanted to have weddings there. So they asked, brought up an amendment that in a wedding or outside non-Masonic events, alcohol could be served. I mean, this was overwhelmingly voted down by at Grand Lodge by the craft. Don't forget, I'm in Florida. And Florida Masonry, there are a lot of lodges from North Florida. North Florida is more like South Georgia. It's very different from South Florida. It's like New York, somewhat like New York City and upstate areas of New York State or any of our large states. Well, you've got a cosmopolitan area in South Florida and a more rural-based area and a more conservative area in North Florida. So North Florida basically has the vote. So this was why in the past this was voted down. I would love to see the use of alcohol permitted in lodges, not in meetings, obviously, but let's say to have a table lodge or for non-Masonic events. For example, it would be wonderful to have the brothers come to the lodge, have a New Year's Eve party, or come to watch a football game on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon. I mean, if a guy wants to have a beer watching a football game, my God, it's not a cardinal sin. But you can't do that. So I think you're going to lose something.
It always seems that it's so demonized. You know, I think so often it comes to the conversation of being said that it's an insurance issue, that it comes back to a liability issue. You know, and I wonder how true that often is. Not being on the business side of the Grand Lodge or even of the lodge itself, looking at the records and the costs and all, it just seems a little bit too temperate to just annex it all together.
We should not open the doors of our lodge to anyone because someone could slip and fall inside the lodge building.
I will share with you in my lodge and in my mother lodge that I demitted from, but I still feel quite close to. I will say that we had a shrine room next to our Blue Lodge room that was licensed, so we could go over there after the meetings if we wanted. But we had to be careful, and we had to be somewhat moderated in how we did it. We didn't want to look like, as you say, a drinking club. So we'd have wine and cheese with the ladies, perhaps after a lodge meeting or something. They didn't like waiting around while we were in the middle of the lodge, but they still, enjoyed that. But we did have to watch to some extent because there were some brethren that were senior in our lodge who had, issues around alcohol and chose not to be around it. And we were mindful of that, and we chose not to take that to extremes. So we always made sure that we had some value in there before we ever got to that, because I knew that a couple of them would just choose to stay away from that element. So we made sure that it wasn't just about that,
We have to watch that. We had a problem or a situation where one of the new Masons at a fellowship club meeting, I think it was his first one, he drank a tremendous amount, and we talked to him, and we said, please, you can't do this. We don't want you getting hurt. You cannot do this. So, I mean, look, situations can happen, but for the most part, people are very reasonable. We go out for dinner. You're not going to have an enormous amount of alcohol because you have to drive. You go to a restaurant. I mean, you have a glass of wine, and basically that's it. We have strict drunk driving laws in Florida, as does every other state. And I think brothers are responsible. Look, we're all Masons. We're all adults. Our restaurants are not sued out of business by people suing for incidents that they get into because of having alcohol at the restaurant. Bars don't go out of business. So I think that's an excuse that really doesn't have that much merit to it.
Peter, I'm glad that we get to talk a little bit about that element of lodge. Greg, did you have any questions about the educational side of the...
Well, education is certainly always more pliable when you put a little alcohol in the mix with it. I was curious, with the way that you're running the education out of that lodge, Peter, what's been the reaction of lodges around you? Have you noticed a lot of attention from other lodges nearby that are interested in affiliating or coming over to the education sessions that you have?
Not very much. We're kind of looked on as, in other words, we get visitors, but we don't get a lot of visitors. A lot of people are not. People go into Masonry for many reasons, and each lodge has its own personality. Ours really is an upper end lodge, and for years there wasn't much communication between our lodge and other lodges. We're getting a lot more now. So we do have people who come. We have people who come to our fellowship club occasionally from other lodges. But mostly the lodges tend to be somewhat parochial and tend to stay by themselves. Also, there's not a lot of time to visit. Our lodge has things going virtually every Tuesday night of the month. And the problem is, again, we've got young Masons, people have families, they've got wives and kids. There's a limit to the amount of time that they can spend out of the house. And the same is true with other lodges. You know, in the old days, people could spend endless time out of the house because the wife would be home during the day, and she could, there was nothing for them to do at night. The kids took care of themselves. Now wives work just as husbands do. And things have to be done at night in the house. Husbands are needed around. Now there's such a stress on homework and also extra school activities that kids have to be transported to that it's very hard for people to get away in the evenings. So, you know, kids have to go to soccer practice, music lessons, ballet, God knows what, baseball practice. You know, in the old days, I just went down and played in the street. I played in the schoolyard opposite my house. Can't do that anymore.
Got to have music and karate and everything else. How do you think that the ideas of education compared to, say, the activity of charity? Do you, in this, you know, it's a generalization, certainly for where you're at, but would you say that a greater degree of interest is put into charity over education, or is the focus on the education itself and the charity just sort of comes with?
Well, what we did is we started something called a Hibiscus Foundation, which people could contribute to, and so requests for money would be turned over. If there were any requests for funds, like let's say someone said, there's a hurricane in Louisiana, we should send some money to them. Okay, fine. We'd vote on it, and we could send it from the Hibiscus Foundation. And the grand, our master has some funds at his disposal that he can use. There's a limited amount of funds, but he has some funds that he can use. So charity has always been a big part of what we do. I have my own concerns about charity. I think it's going in the wrong place. We've been doing charity for years. You sort of never read about someone who is a patient at the shrine or whose kid was treated at the shrine who becomes a Mason. I'm sure it happens, but you would imagine that every kid who's treated at the shrine, their father would say, gee, these people are doing such a wonderful job. I want to be a Mason and a Shriner. You're just not seeing it. Same with the Scottish Rite. They have the speech language centers. The York Rite has their centers. But you don't see it generating any Masonic activity. We did all kinds of things in our lodge. We participated in children's ID, and people would say, gee, that's great. You guys are doing a wonderful job. We give them videos of their kid in case, God forbid, their child was ever abducted or lost. Yet no one ever said, gee, how do I become a Mason? And this is not the reason why we do charity, but you start to wonder, wait a minute, we're spending millions and millions and millions of dollars a year on charity. And charity is important. I think it's extremely important. in Florida each year, the Grand Master has a charity, and they're usually for very worthwhile things. Sometimes it's a Masonic home, be for juvenile diabetes, cancer, all sorts of things. And these are important. But we're missing one major charity, and that is our lodges. Our lodges are getting old. The lodges don't have the ability to keep up the buildings. I've traveled a lot around the state of Florida. I was in the Grand Line of the York Rite for a couple of years, and I've been in a lot of lodges, and they're getting old. You walk in, paint's peeling. They're dingy. They're poorly lit. You can smell the mold from the old moldy rugs. People's cast-off furniture is downstairs. You can someone has an old piano that doesn't really function anymore. They give it to the lodge, and nobody ever gets rid of these bequests. The tables downstairs where the brothers eat are usually kind of old and beat up. The chairs, they've been there for the past 40 years. What impact does this have on new Masons or people who are interested? And it's not a positive impact because it's not that things have to be bright, shiny, and new, but things that have that 1950s look and smell about them are going to turn brothers off. And the Grand Master's charity and our charitable efforts should be directed to a fund to help lodges renovate their buildings.
Some sort of refurbishment there. I think you're spot on, and especially in the analysis of looking at some of the broader aspect of charity. You know, I think very often we internally look at it as it being a vehicle for some of this sort of self-promotion. Not that we're doing it in order to venerate ourselves. You know, we're not doing it to say, hey, we're great, be a part of us. But obviously, we're doing it because we want to. Huge sums of money that go into these charities, but I do agree with you in the sense that perhaps that there's something being missed in the mark of actually reinvesting, if you will, back into the image of the whole, of updating the lodges like that.
Sure. Also, for Masonic education, the Grand Lodges should be putting out videos for new Masons, for people who are interested in Masons. Some of the Grand Lodges do, but it should be a concerted effort by all the Grand Lodges. I mean, Freemasonry in California is no different from Freemasonry in New York or Florida. It's still Freemasonry. There should be videos put out, worthwhile videos that people can watch, educational things on different aspects of Freemasonry. And you get the same answer, well, Grand Lodge doesn't have the money. Sure, we don't have the money, because we're using our charitable funds for other things. Even though these other things are worthwhile, we need to give some charity and to ourselves. Freemasonry needs some charity right now, and that is to bring us into the 21st century as far as modernity. Grand Lodge should have a superb website, any Grand Lodge, with videos on it that people can go to and see a half an hour video on why be a Freemason, or the history of Freemasonry. Young Masons should have it. They should be available at every level. Sometimes people tend to fall asleep during the lectures at the degrees, not because they're not interesting, because people have worked all day. A degree lasts a couple of hours, and by this time it's now 10 o'clock at 9 o'clock at night, people are tired.
I think they should have cushions on the chairs, more comfortable cushions myself.
Yeah, I think it could be done a lot differently. Some of this could be done by video.
That was a joke, Peter. I wasn't going to fall asleep on the sofa.
No.
Okay, never mind. Sorry, Peter.
But, you know, we hear some of the old, you can hear the music of some of the older brothers in the background as the lecture is going on. And it's not that they're not interesting, but they may need to be, I think they also need to be modernized a bit. Just because they said the same thing 150 years ago doesn't mean that Grand Lodge can't change, make the wording a little bit better. We modernize a lot of the things. I mean, we can't change them, but Grand Lodge can do something. But
Peter, what I'm hearing then is you want to see the Grand Lodges enter into the new era and get into new media and have YouTube videos, webcasts, email blasts, these sorts of things, and not necessarily have our ritual on YouTube yet, although it's probably there, just not by us.
It's there.
But, I mean, I'm sure it can be found.
I think it comes back to just what we were talking about, though, a little bit of reinvestment back on the original asset, a reinvestment on what we're doing. You know, even to circle this back with the idea of the journal, one of the questions in our gallery was just, when this was approached, was this ever bounced off the Grand Lodge for their approval, or was it just something that is an endeavor taken upon yourselves?
You know, there's an old expression it was translated in English as "make like you don't know, don't ask questions." I mean, if someone didn't like it, they could have come up to us. There's really nothing. Everything in it is basically Masonic history. There's nothing that Grand Lodge could object to. So no one has ever really said anything. We've sent this up to Grand Lodge. In other words, I sent the secretary copies of each of the reviews, and they said, "Oh, this is wonderful. We're going to put it on display." And so I haven't heard anything. There's been no negative comment from Grand Lodge.
And I think that's the same thing you're describing. That's sort of the environment that I think, in a lot of ways, that sort of outreach that you're talking about, that infrastructure reinvestment's been operating. It's been standalone contributors sort of doing things, including aspects like this program. Just in seeing that there's a need for it and taking the time to pull it and put it together.
Well, you guys are doing a tremendous job. I mean, you've had wonderful speakers on, and I love to listen to the podcasts in the car on my iPod. But this is important, and it doesn't necessarily have to cost a lot of money. The Fellowship Club doesn't cost anything. The brothers contribute for the dinner. The Shrine doesn't charge us because a lot of us are members of the Shrine and we're a Shrine unit. It's open to any Mason, EA and above, not only for Hibiscus, it's open to any Mason. The Hibiscus Masonic Review didn't cost the Lodge anything. These are all voluntary contributions by the brothers. So things don't have to cost Lodge much. It just takes people to roll up their sleeves and do it. If you have a great idea, get out and do it. If you find some great degree that was worked 200 years ago and you want to do it, get a bunch of guys, put it on. If you don't want to put it on in Lodge, go find a room somewhere, rent some chairs, just shut the door so there are no non-Masons there and go ahead and do it. Go to someone's house and do it. It's not a Masonic affair. You're putting on a play, in a sense. So I think we have to use our imagination. I think people need imagination in Masonry. We've got to bring in new brothers. One of the things that the new brothers ask us, they don't want to hear that there are no secrets in Masonry. And they say, what are the? And I tell them, yes, there is a secret in Freemasonry, and I disagree with this. No business in Freemasonry, no secrets in Freemasonry. What is the secret? You only know when you're a Mason. It's something within you. It's like, what is the secret of your family? Greg or Dean, you can tell me your wife's name, what your kids' names are, how many rooms in your house. I don't know anything about your family. All I know is some basic facts. All as far as Freemasonry, what you see in Duncan's exposures they're just basic words. They don't convey the spirit of Freemasonry. That spirit of Freemasonry is brotherhood when you're raised. It's kind of like an ace salvationist religion. It's religion without salvation. Salvation is up to your church or synagogue. You learn that in your house of worship. What we deal with is basically religion. It's brotherhood and the belief in God and conducting ourselves the way we would in front of the Almighty. And that's what we do. So that's And this feeling that you get, that's the secret. And that's the secret that people understand. So we really do have a secret.
I think, Dean, I was just looking at our dashboard. I think I see we have one of our callers who has a question. Do we want to bring a caller in and have a brief question?
That's actually Peter.
Sure.
Oh,
Peter has a question
absolutely.
For himself. I was watching that was a while ago when you heard that little pause, and this is part of us working the kinks out, Greg. And another
gotcha.
Kink is that we also have to watch our time, and we have about four
yeah.
minutes left of the show, so
coming up to the time. And Peter, I hate stopping the conversation there. I think if Gene and I had our way, we'd probably continue this on late into the evening.
Absolutely.
Let me just say first, thank you for coming on the program. Thank you for producing this journal. This is a fantastic journal. I've been reading through mine ever since you sent it to me and just picking it up in between work and everything else and reading them as I go.
Oh,
just to let everybody know, you can find these on Amazon, you said, but you can also find them at the hibiscuslodge.com website. You can find a link to the website off the original show posting on freemasoninformation.com. Or just go under Google and Google in hibiscuslodge.com, and you'll find it. It's a link right there to the book, and you can pick up a copy of it. It's not very expensive, is it? It's a fair price for a journal of this size, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, the first one was $17. The second one was $22, I believe. But, you know, it's 100 and, like you say, it's 260 pages or so. So it's a full-size book.
With a lot of quality material in it. I mean, these are all top-notch contributors.
Yeah, that's what we push for. There's really no philosophical. This is not a journal of philosophy. It's a journal of hard-nosed history. If anyone has any questions and they want to contact me, they can get a hold of me by email. I'd be happy to, you know, if you have any questions about Fellowship Club or the journal. Can I get my email address?
Please,
sure, most certainly.
It's PMMM, that's Peter Mike, PMMM@bellsouth.net.
Just so anybody missed it, that's Peter MMM at bellsouth.net?
No, P as in Peter, PMMM@bellsouth.net.
Okay, sorry, PMMM@bellsouth.net. And again, you can find a link to Hibiscus Lodge on our website and actually link back from there. Peter, thanks again. I'm glad you came on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Right,
I'd love to be here.
We have some holes in the calendar because of all this moving. There was a few kinks in the calendar that we're working out. But next week's guest, check the website for who it's going to be. That's going to be my job number one tomorrow to get that squared away. On the 19th, we have Brother John Nagy, who actually has a brand new book out, and I was just flipping through mine. It's a book called Building Hiram. We actually have it in our store on the website now, and it's a fantastic little book of catechisms to explain pretty much everything in Freemasonry. I don't know, Dean, have you had a chance to...
I will say that he does ship them out pretty quick, so that if anyone does want one before the show to get a chance to see what it looks like, it is rife with some pretty neat stuff, symbolism and that sort of thing. Pick one up, and we can take it from there.
Yep, and this is for the 19th. So, and then we have a few things that are coming up. There's a gentleman by the name of Steve Maines that I need to work on some dates with on some Masonic and esoteric fiction. Which was a little bit surprising to me to actually run across. But that'll be next week or in the upcoming weeks. And then there's a few guests that are on my radar, and I think we're going to go back and revisit the OTO a little bit and talk to them to get a key in on where they're at in their relationship to Freemasonry. And lots of other fun things coming up. Maybe we have a table talk and a tech talk coming in soon, and all sorts of good things. Let us know, everybody. Let us know what you think of the new format. We are on Blog Talk Radio. If someone sends you this podcast, you can find us on Blog Talk Radio. Just do a search for Masonic Central. We will be going back up to iTunes very soon, and if not already tonight, we just have to investigate it. But you can find out, we'll be posting updates on freemasoninformation.com, as well as where we're going to post them, Dean. We'll be posting stuff on our Facebook page, off of Twitter. You can find us all over the web. We are everywhere. If you're listening to the show live right now through our application, you can call in, but you better hurry because we're going to have a parking lot chat, but the podcast will stop streaming in a few seconds. So if you hear us drop out, that's the end of the show. This is Greg Stewart saying travel light.
And this is Dean Kennedy saying see you in the east. Okay, we're now off streaming. So those of us listening now downloaded the show.
Congratulations. You guys did it came out perfectly.
Oh, my God. I felt like we were running a race right to the end of that.
Now, Greg, I will remind you that, people downloading this show after can still hear this part of the content until we close out the show. So this, although
does
our
it,
streaming contingent
well,
can't hear
no,
us anymore.
That's right. This does stay.
People dialing can still hear this extra content that we are now developing with our guests.
Well, then I guess let's say goodnight for the evening. And Dean, do we have an idea for an after show?
We could make this the after show if
well,
you wanted, but
well, no,
but
this is going to continue on the podcast, so we'll just wrap it up here. If you're listening to this as a podcast and not the stream, this is the extra content. We usually do this as a parking lot chat, but unfortunately tonight we're going to do the parking lot chat because we don't want this as part of the download. Thanks for listening, Peter. Thanks for coming on. I don't want to continue this on for everybody because it's going to continue streaming.
Well, thank you guys for having me.
Our
night.
Pleasure.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Thanks, Peter. Bye-bye.
Have a good night.
Thanks, you too.
Are we cut to clarity? I'm gonna cut out right now.